Greetings and salutations, everyone. This is AC2GS with the Limark Technical Net. We're here every Sunday night at 8 p.m. This has been going on for about 40 years now, mostly under the guidance of Dick, K2RIW, who unfortunately became a silent key a few years ago. But in his memory, we keep it alive and we keep it going. So it's Sunday night, it's 8 p.m., and you're all welcome to this President's Day edition of the Limark Technical Net. Let me drop, and I'll give you the usual links. Okay. If you need to reach me and you can't get me on the radio, then email is as good as anyway. That would be either for mailbag-type questions for the Technical Net or topics that you'd either like to be part of a discussion or hear discussed. Or if you have any technical puzzles, we're always looking for interesting technology puzzles to kind of wake up a couple of our brain cells and remind us of some fundamental concepts and physics and biology and chemistry and all kinds of fun stuff. Or if you want me to tap Paul on the shoulder and ask him to take a look at some NASA-related or space-related bit of news. So my email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. If you would like to directly email Paul, you can simply address it to spacenetreport at gmail.com. And it'll get to him. I have a link page, all kinds of interesting links, articles that I found interesting, submissions that people have emailed me that might be useful. Take a look at them. Tonight we have a visual, a VNA sweep of one of our regular TechNet participants did on a couple of his antennas that hopefully we'll be able to discuss tonight. So that image is available on the link page, and you get to the link page by typing in roy.ac2gs.com. We also have a chat room available to anyone interested. You can either go to Limark's own website and find the link, or you can type into your browser chat.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you to our little chat room. We stream audio of the Technical Net, and because a few people wanted to kind of have access to it the rest of the week, we leave it on 24/7. So if you want to hear an internet stream of Glen Oaks Repeater, just type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that'll do that. And always, I'd like to remind people, Mike KC2NJI, which Dick used to call Mike Number One, he maintains an archive of technical nets that go as far back as September of 2006. That's available on his website, amateurradio.tv. He's had over 1 million visitors, so make it 1,000,001. It's a great place to listen to archives of past TechNets. Let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you my plans for tonight. Okay, it's going to be a regular night. We're going to ask people if they have any technical questions. Hopefully the first few questions will be basically amateur radio related technology, but if we have the time, and usually we do, we'll open it for any kinds of science and even medical related questions, any topics. We do not diagnose nor treat, but general questions on science and technology and medicine, we'll be more than happy to make our best attempt to talk about. That should take us to 10:15 when Paul will join us for the SpaceNet report. That'll go on until about 11 o'clock p.m., and I'll return and tie a bow on it all and wish you a safe and enjoyable week and call it a net. So that's my plan. If the universe allows and the laws of physics and my radio and the repeater and all kinds of fun stuff. So with that in mind, let me drop for a second and ask anyone who would like to put their first name and call sign on the list tonight for any technical question or topic or comment, please do so.
And to exceed.
D2OGB, just one simple question.
What is 22 Bravo Zulu with a question. Name is Rich.
Okay, very good. Wes, Greg and Rich recognize Wesley, because I tend to think that your comments are going to be kind of longish, and Craig kind of said he just had one thing to say. Do you mind if I take him before you?
No problem.
Okay, very good. Craig, I know you have a busy job, and sometimes you got to go to sleep early. So what's your short question tonight?
Well, it might take a few minutes, but it shouldn't be too long. Drive that I have in my computer, it's empty right now. I've moved to a bigger boot drive. There was a time a couple days ago when I turned on my computer and the shortcut for it on my desktop had a question mark and had a feeling that it thinks it's not connected, which it wasn't. I logged off and logged back on, and intermittently it says it's not connected, it's connected, and this and that. I mean, it says it's connected now, but maybe think there might be dust or something getting in the way. I don't think it's a bad drive or anything.
Well, it could be a loose connection, so certainly it probably would be wise to crack the case open and remove it and blow some air, clean it up a little bit and reseat the connections and see if that helps. So hopefully, if you're very lucky, that should be sufficient. Sometimes things go a little wonky. Some components start to go bad, and they go off and on specs, and they appear and disappear to the motherboard. So the very first thing I would do that goes along with your theory would be really, reseat it. But, before you reseat it, just kind of blow a little of the dust out of it. Usually these things collect dust no matter what you do.
And I'll get some air in a can and do just that. I haven't blown my computer out since I had it moved over to a new case. So, yeah, I'll do that. I had a feeling it was probably just something simple. Plus, I don't really want to take apart the glass to get to it, especially since I'd have to move my tower to hardwood, because if I'm on the carpet and I don't touch metal before the computer and I spark it, it's game over for the motherboard. So I don't feel like doing that right now. So, just a little air in a can should fix it. Thanks. That's it. AC2GS, net control, KD2OGB.
Okay. Good luck, Craig. Yeah, you got to be concerned about static, especially during the dry winter months. When it's humid, a lot of times the static electricity will be dissipated rather quickly. But most technicians wear small little straps on their wrist, and they ground the equipment, they ground their body, they ground everything. So never kind of play around with solid-state equipment, opening the box, when it's you got carpet and static charge. If you touch a doorknob and you get a little zap, then you can imagine what the semiconductor gates on an integrated circuit go through. It basically blasts a hole through it. So I would agree with you, Craig.
Rather do it right on wood since it doesn't conduct. I mean, I actually had my case standing upright when I added the two extra sticks and had no issues. I mean, I touched metal before touching the computer to make sure. I mean, I don't really wear a strap. As long as you just touch something that's metal and then the computer, you should be fine.
Yeah, well, it sort of depends upon what you do for a living. If very, very rarely you put your fingers into these devices and you ground yourself right before you do it, you don't have much of a risk. But, if you're sitting at a work table day in and day out You might absentmindedly do something nasty. Some of these integrated circuits have incredible sensitivity. So even though it doesn't visibly spark, it may discharge enough voltage to destroy a gate of some kind of integrated circuits input transistors and so. So if you're in the business. People out there already know to wear a little grounding wrist straps, and they have grounded mats, and all kinds of things are grounded. So these guys do it for a living, so they take it very seriously. If you do it once in a while, then just grounding yourself right before you do something and not kind of tempting fate is probably all you really need.
You touch the motherboard and it sparks. Anything connected to the motherboard will also take the bullet, so you got to keep that in mind, too. All right, let me get going. I'll be standing by for questions. KD2OGB.
Okay, very good. So on to you, Wesley. I read the emails. You want to kind of go through a rather long list of inexpensive antennas.
Try to keep it short. We may have some discussion over the need of grand radials. I get across 80 to 6 meter inexpensive antennas with no radials by Sigma. A few things that I have noticed. I'm trying to usually know more about the company. It's a very much known company, but Sigma website is suspended, and it says contact your hosting provider for more information. They are, however, very much present on eBay, and the price is astonishing. Uncommon. $154.56, 3.5 to 80 meters, and 6 meters also. The antenna is a vertical antenna, no radial or radial free, and it has 1-to-1 SWR with or other antenna tuner only at 6 meter, no, 1-to-1, all the way.
Wesley?
Go ahead.
Once again, I caution people. I have a very nice PALSTAR antenna tuner. I can tune my doorknob to 1-to-1. So this the beginning and end of all antennas is not necessarily impedance matching them.
I absolutely agree with you. It's what it says on the text. So the Sigma company is located in Birmingham, West Midlands, United Kingdom. They sold 444 of those antennas during 12 months, and they received 4 negatives out of it. I was looking at some parts of this antenna. It looks nice, however, the box with the transformer is not really done to the minute details. Okay. So this antenna, if anybody wants to go there, is ready for you to pick up if you're interested. I'm going to give you some information. The antenna is fed using 50 ohm coaxial with SO239 socket at the base unit. A 6-to-1 transformer is located in Weathersfield box at the bottom of 6 meter telescoping aluminum element. The transformer reduced the impedance at the feed point to a more acceptable level, making the antenna much more efficient and allowing proper and easy tuning via antenna tuner or automatic antenna tuner that is present in most of the radios. If the user experiences excessive local static noise, the transformer is DC grounded. Grounding will not affect tuning ratios. That's end of quote. The antenna model number is HFX-80. If Dr. Roy decides to put it on his website, and pictures, including the balloon, will be available for you. We have another antenna that is also very inexpensive. Those antennas are rated from from $80 to $190. And also, it's 3.5 to 80 meters, 29 to 10. So it's 3.5 to 29 megahertz, and it's 1 to 1. Only the exemption is that in 10 megahertz is 1 to 2 SWR. Interesting is that the previous antenna was rated 400 watts and this one is rated 1000 watts, which is 1 kilowatt. Some of the information. The antenna is fit using 50 ohm via SO239 socket base and unit, and now the 4 to 1 transformer is located in Weathersfield box at the bottom. Or fiberglass element. So this antenna is not made from the aluminum, but is made from fiberglass, which is good. But then I decided to compare that with Hustler 6BTV, which is 6-band vertical antenna by DX Engineering. And I found that this antenna is not much more expensive, but has a famous name, Hustler. It's $259. If you use some additional parts, it will go about $100 more. But in the way that is delivered by Signal, we compare two, we're looking at approximately $80 to $100 difference. Okay. And the next, what we would ask is, we have two statements, and one of the statements is conflicting with the other. So we have the antenna, vertical antenna, no counterpoise, no radials, no work. Every antenna needs balance. Every current must flow on the both sides of the antenna. A single element end fit antenna needs a counterpoise and or radials. Otherwise, it will attempt to use a coax shield and surrounding metal to achieve RF current balance. And the second statement is, a J-pole is an antenna with neither radials nor counterpoise, and it works. An end-fit zip also works, which is a kind of what a J-pole is. So then we would ask ourselves, what is actually J-pole? What is the difference between those antennas? And what is the counterpoise? The number of articles that talks about it were sent to Dr. Roy. Dr. Roy, question for you. How does it work? It doesn't have radials. N2XGN.
AC2GS. Well, Wesley, there is actually one type of antenna that does not require a counterpoise. The way I like to explain it is just think of in terms of a standard theoretical center-fed dipole. It's a half wavelength long. It has the feed point in the middle. Its impedance is the lowest value in the middle. Now, if you were theoretically able to slide that antenna feed off the center position to one side of the half-wave dipole, and you got all the way to the end, you could still have a resonant antenna its impedance, its theoretical impedance, if it didn't exist in the real world, would be infinite. But since we don't live in the theoretical world, its practical impedance is about 2,000-3,000 ohms at the end. Now, theoretically, if you're using this at the frequency that the half wave is made for, you should not require a counterpoise. It should operate fine. So that's the basis for actually what a J-pole is and what a ZEP is. It's a half wave monopole. The problem is dealing with the high 2,000-3,000 ohm impedance. In the case of a J-pole, you then take a quarter wavelength of parallel wire. It operates as the transmission line for the half wave end fed, and you tap it at the 50 ohm impedance level. It's shorted at one end, so at one end of that length of quarter wave transmission line, it's 0 ohms, but a little bit up from there is a 50 ohm impedance match, and so that's where you tap your transmission line into the J-pole, and it's actually just a tuned impedance transformed end fed half wave radiator. That's what a J-pole is.
KD2FIU?
Yes, George.
A capacitive end fed off center dipole. It's actually fed at the bottom. You have capacitance at the bottom and the top. And you are not symmetrically a dipole with it. Capacitance half wave end fed dipole.
Well, I'm not quite, I don't quite understand the concept of it being capacitance, but it's not a dipole. By definition, dipoles are two poles. Before, you know, the theoretical construct of the half-wave center-fed dipole absolutely is a dipole. And even if it's off-center, it's still a dipole because it has two legs. But if you slide the feed point all the way at the end of the half-wave, it ends up being, by kind of definition, a monopole.
You actually slide, the capacitance is sliding toward the top with a short circuit. It's sliding at the bottom with a short circuit. A J-pole is not truly a capacitive half-wave end-fed dipole. You're not really putting a capacitor at top or at the bottom. A J-pole doesn't have truly 50 ohms. You can do so by stubbing it at the bottom with a very specific number of distance of wire, depending upon the frequency you want to work it, where you short it, stub it. That will bring you closer to 50 ohms. Now, you're going to bring it up to the top and over. You're going to actually feed it over the top. But you're not in a continuous wave. You have a capacitance disconnect on the top of the antenna that is going to, and it is a continuous wiring if you're doing it right. J-pole really doesn't fall in the form of this. J-pole is not really a good radiator. Capacitive end fed off center dipole is what is better. J-pole does not really bring you onto both frequencies that you want, the alternative frequencies. KD2FIU.
Unbelievable.
Okay, you kind of was throwing all kinds of stuff. Number one, J-poles are not really designed to be multi-band. I don't know what kind of point you were making. As I mentioned, the impedance of that half-wave section of the J-pole is 2,000-3,000 ohms. It's not 50 ohms. You need the extra metal that acts as a transmission line, the two parallel conductors that are a quarter wavelength, and you need to tap them at the 50 ohm impedance level. So you're kind of saying what I said, but in a different way, and adding off-center dipoles for some reason. We're just talking about the mechanism for a J-pole. It's also kind of called a folded ZEP antenna. There is a variation of the J-pole called a Slim Jim, in which another section of half-wavelength wire is bent over, and it's very much like the way a folded dipole works. Some people like J-poles. Some people find them rather inefficient. J-pole has a higher takeoff angle than a Slim Jim, by the way, so it's not quite as sensitive to elevation needs as a Slim Jim is. But I'm not quite sure where off-center dipoles fit into this discussion of J-poles.
They are off-center-fed dipoles. Now, you're absolutely agreeing with me when I say the stub. The stub at the bottom is going to give you the resonance, correct?
Yes. The stub is an impedance-matching transmission line. The way most people I find describe the J-pole is the actual radiating element is an N-fed monopole. It is not an off-center dipole.
That's exactly what I'm saying. You have to stub it to the impedance that you need, and that requires a feed of wire below the antenna to give you the resonance that you want. Now, if you're going to feed this antenna above the stub, you will have the impedance that you want correctly designed. But a J-pole in itself is not a good dual-band antenna, and everybody thinks it is. It's not.
Well, again, I don't know who everyone might be. I never really considered it a great dual-band antenna. And the way the J-poles are designed, the matching stub is part of the design of the J-pole. If you didn't have the stub, it wouldn't look like a J. It's the reason why people call it a J is because you have the half wavelength actual radiating antenna, then you have a quarter length of something that looks like the Intella element but is really more of a transmission line, and then parallel to it you have another quarter wavelength thing that's could be as just as thick as the antenna is. And it's shorted at the base, so that's why people call it a J-pole, because it looks like the letter J. But the lower portion of the J-pole, from the half wavelength down, is all that is the matching stub to get you a 50 ohm of impedance for an N-fed half wave radiating antenna.
Systems resetting. I'm not sure. I haven't seen that before. AB6MB.
Okay. Unfortunately, a couple of people doubled. I heard Wesley. I also heard Jeff, AB6MB from Echolink. We got to be nice and polite with Echolink because it's very easy to foul up Echolink's transmission. So let's hold off on our push-to-talk buttons for a second. And Jeff, what would you like to say?
Roy, what happened was the system went dead quiet. Nothing was heard. Another ham came on and asked if there was a net, and I was explaining what had happened with the timeout. So that's why we had that doubling. So my apologies. That's the last thing I want to do. AB6MB.
Okay, no problem. Yeah, I noticed that last week that the audio feed kind of drops out and then it comes back. So I'll have to discuss with Lou what might be causing that. But, okay, no problem. Wesley, you wanted to say something on the subject?
No, I was just saying that the calling station was there because it was in the time when you were transmitting. Jeff has probably something to add.
No, I just asked Jeff. He was talking to another person who was confused on EchoLink because the audio feed dropped out going to them, but apparently not coming back to us. So when Jeff was explaining to the other person on EchoLink, it bled through to double with me and then double with you. No problem with that. Well, there are two ways of adjusting a transmission line matching, impedance matching circuit. You can tap it at a different distance across the quarter wavelength, or by adjusting the distances between the two elements, you're effectively changing the inherent impedance of that transmission line. So those are the two ways to do that. By the way, just to get back to the Sigma just for a second, they're located in Birmingham, England. It's kind of in the middle of the country there. I've looked up EHAM reviews, and apparently there are a few people who were not terribly happy with their quality assurance. There was one guy that had an intermittent short that occurred with a ballon, and another guy complained on EHAM that his ballon was all burnt out. So, unfortunately, I don't know what causes it, but there's a quality issue with Sigma, so be aware.
Thank you for the information. How do you probably pronounce it? Hustler, Hustler, Hustler. Hustler is a quite famous center exit.
Yes, Hustler is a very famous, it's a famous antenna manufacturer. It's one of the few, I think, that isn't owned by MFJ yet, but give them a chance. There's a lot of antenna companies out there of, some are better than others. I'm a little wary of antenna designs that mention that you don't, quote, need a counterpoise or radials. Usually if you look at the little teeny tiny print, it says, by the way, radials probably will improve its capability, but you don't have to have them. Theoretically speaking, you don't have to have counterpoises for anything, because as you mentioned, your coax cable will simply be shanghaied into that duty and bring a lot of RF into your shack. So I'm always a little dubious of advertisements that say you do not need radials. That usually doesn't mean that they wouldn't benefit you. It's just more marketing than anything else, I think.
Yeah, I was trying to bring up the subject of vertical antennas, and eventually try to discuss the radial system, needed or needed, or their possible versions. There is an antenna by N6LF. It's a vertical antenna with elevated ground system. an antenna with four elevated fourth wave. Yeah, I'm thinking if I say it properly in English, fourth wave radials would be efficient as one with 60 or more quarter ground base radials. So yeah, I should say quarter wave radials. Okay, let me stop.
Wesley?
For you?
Yes, George recognized. I just want to say a couple of things about radials. Well, yeah, I mean, Dick, may rest in peace, said lots of things about radials. A lot of things are written about radials. There is an incredible difference between radials on a ground vertical and radials on an elevated vertical. In an elevated vertical, like many of us have UHF, VHF antennas of that kind, and they're small little stub radials, you just have to make them symmetrical, so there's no asymmetry to the radiation pattern. In other words, if you were to design an antenna that simply had one radial, the pattern would kind of favor the direction that the single radial was pointed. So either three or four quarter wave radials are sufficient to give you that nice little omnidirectional radiating pattern. When you put it on the ground, things change, because what you're worried about on the ground is coupling to the ground, where a lot of the RF ends up getting soaked up by the ground and warming up the worms, as Dick used to say. So for that, you are really required to run much more than four radials. Usually 36 is the magic number, but the more the merrier. And what you're trying to do is shielding the ground coupling from the RF so that it'll just reflect off of it and go into the ionosphere rather than into the soil. So with that, just I wanted to mention that. George, what would you like to say?
George?
Well, I guess George stepped away for a moment. Hopefully he'll come back soon. Wesley?
Yeah, actually, you're right. The article in 6LF talks also about the conflicting results with serious experiments directly comparing verticals with two types of ground systems. The results of those experiments were reported in QEX and in PDF file. I can send it to you. Concluded that at least under ideal conditions, four elevated quarter wave radials could be as equivalent to the large number of radials on the ground. So yes, I'm repeating again what you said, and to it.
Oh well, you know, great minds think alike.
Hustler 6BV. So it provides, DX Engineering, owned by MFJ. Did they buy them?
No, not yet, but give them a chance.
Okay. So it looks like Sigma is falling down. They sell tons of their antennas for cheap on eBay, but their website doesn't work. Or maybe they found that this is the easier way. Back to you before I go to Hustler.
Okay, you never know. I mean, some guys just aren't good at websites. They give it to a nephew, and he does not a great job with it. He's probably just a mom-and-pop company. He puts together the balance in the garage, something like that, and he makes a couple of bucks off of the eBay sales. I would tend to go with EHAM reviews rather than eBay, because I don't know how secure those review sites are. But all things being equal, you know, to save a penny and lose a pound, I would stick with a well-known manufacturer with well-known retailers that if you have a problem with quality, you can take it back to them. Whereas on eBay with an English company, lots of luck.
Okay. 6BTV. That's the type of the antenna. 6-band vertical. HF and DX installation. DX installation. Well, what it says. Okay. Provide automatic selection of bands through use of optimum Q traps. When I read Q traps, it reminds me plumbing with a Q. Which are individually and precisely tuned and internally sealed at the factory workshop. Okay. Those traps are parallel tuned circuits which provide very effective isolation between the vertical section, permitting precise multi-band operation. Low SWR on entire ham band from 80 to 75 meters. How is the other one? The other one, they don't say much about it, but they say that they are heavy duty antennas. Yeah, it looks like this engineering has a very good reviews on it. And again, no radios. And to XGN.
WA2CDL.
Yes, Andy.
Yeah, I've been listening. Lastly, I got a question. Do you have a microphone gain control on your radio?
Yes, I do.
I'm not sure if you're listening to yourself, but your audio is so loud. You're not over deviating, but your gain is up way, way too high.
I can switch it off, but the thing is that I'm not going to be that loud. I have to speak louder.
Did you just make a change? Because you sounded better.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do, but I have to speak louder now.
Yeah, that sounds... I don't know why you have to speak louder, because it sounds good now, a lot better. It's... Because the deviation is automatically adjusted in the repeater. The repeater's got built-in leveling, deviation leveling, so it's not a deviation problem, it's the audio gain. But it sounds better now. You don't have all that background noise.
My question to you is, if I speak not loud enough, or a little bit lower, how does it sound now?
It's too loud. I hear all the noise in the background, and it's loud.
Okay, thank you very much for telling me. I switched off the processor right now, and I hope it is better now. Okay, so coming back, thank you very much, Andy. It's 50-ohm base impedance when it's sold and tuned accordingly to the instruction. What do you think about DX Engineering? And to XGN, Dr. Roy.
AC2GS. I'm a big fan of DX Engineering. I buy some things from HRO. I've tried to stay away from Gigaparts. I had a bad experience. Maybe it was just bad luck on my part. I ordered a bunch of things, and the cost of it meant that they weren't going to charge me shipping, but they didn't have everything in stock. So they only shipped me part of it, and when they were going to ship the other part, they said, well, since it's below the price, we're going to have to charge you shipping. So I complained and yelled and screamed and jumped up and down, and they said, okay, forget about it. But it left a bad taste in my mouth. So DX Engineering, I've had nothing but good stories to tell. When it says it's in stock, it's in stock. They don't trick you on that. And usually when you buy something and it's in stock, that night it's on the truck coming to you. So I'm a big fan of DX Engineering.
Okay. One more comment about elevated. radios. Elevated ground systems are frequently used in place of wires or in the ground under vertical. This kind of ground system can work very well, but when there are only few radials in the elevated system, it can be very sensitive to asymmetries in radial fan nearby conductors. So I gave you that quote because it is important that we don't have to have any symmetry or be worried about the length of the radials when we are on the ground, although we need more of them. We elevate them so they act as a counterpoise system. They have to be somehow geometrically arranged. Dr. Roy.
Yeah, I mean, you could either set three. I've seen them arranged in 1/3 of the 360, each 120 degrees apart from each other, and other people use four, and that's 90 degrees separate. So as long as they are symmetrical, you're pretty much going to get a close to omni directional radiation pattern. You don't want to cluster them in any one portion of the 360 because then they'll become asymmetrical. So again, either 120 degrees apart for three or 90 degrees apart for four.
A few words about a counterpoise, what it is and how it works for some people. I understand that most of listeners know what it is and how it works, but it doesn't hurt to hear it again. Counterpoise is a network of suspended horizontal wires or cables or metal screen used as a substitute for earth-ground connection in the radio antenna system. It is used with radio transmitters or receivers when a normal earth-ground cannot be used because of the soil resistance, or when the antenna is mounted on the ground level, for example, of building. So if we have a metal roof, then we may assume that it's a replacement of the metal screen. And the metal screen, grid, if I would say grid, size is, it depends from the wavelength. In low frequency it doesn't matter, but in a high frequency of 1 gigahertz, it counts. Dr. Roy.
Yeah, it's pronounced grid. The general concept and the way, again, the Dick used to describe it, and a lot of textbooks describe it, is it kind of goes back to the old concept that you have a half-wave center-fed dipole. Now, you could chop off half of it and throw it away, and then if you replaced it with basically a sheet of conducting material that acted as a mirror, you would create a virtual image for another dipole on the other side, and although the impedance would drop to half, it would act as a resonant center-fed dipole, except that its radiation pattern would only be on one side, not the other, because the other side's virtual. Now, you can replace that infinite plane of conducting material with a set of radials. You can replace it with a single wire. You can replace it with a chicken wire. If you keep the size of the opening smaller than the wavelength, as far as the electromagnetic wave sees it, it's a solid. You have problems, though, if you use things like chicken wire in the real world, because what inevitably happens is the weather gets to it, produces corrosion, rust. So now you have a bunch of dissimilar of nonlinear junctions, and so you can produce a whole lot of noisy harmonics at those corroded junctions in your artificial ground. So although chicken wire sounds nice, Over the long term, it's probably not a great idea.
Yeah, and to actually, a few words about the history of grant system, antenna grant system. I hope I'm not going to be interrupted or humiliated by George again. The counterpoint involved with Marconi monopole antenna during the 1890s. That was the first decade of the radio wireless telegraphic era. Was particularly advocated by British radio pioneer Oliver Lodge, but that coming to Marconi. In 1917, Marconi was trying to build his own antenna plant. He went to Bologna, California, and he acquired a humongous amount of land there, and then the United States government was very much interested in what he is doing, and they created a company. Actually, they didn't create, but it was made from government involve people, and that was RCA. That was the beginning of RCA.
Wesley?
Go ahead.
I'm a little confused. Are you telling me that there's a city in California called Bologna? Because I can't find one.
Bologna, hold on. Bolina, California.
Oh, okay.
Some history about it is, so Marconi was trying to go with Tesla's ideas about sending energy around the world, and he went to Bolina, California. Then in 1919, the government was very much disturbed. By that time, the similar building to the building of Marconi was built on the nearby land, and they were spying on him what he's doing. So he built a number of monopole antennas, but what he did is he exposed at a depth of 6 to 20 feet land, and he put a grid from the copper wire, grid. From the copper wire. Thank you for correcting my English. Although we don't know how feasible was his idea of sending energy through the earth, that's what he called that, RCA was very much potent into making this plan never-ending. In 1921, the company was closed by United States government, and the plan were never made. From some of the notes of Marconi was that he was planning to deliver electricity to the ships on the sea, too. So, from some other sources, we've got information that the first communication of Marconi over the radio was made during the ground waves. And the ground waves goes to the subject that some people don't want to hear there. Here. So I'm not going to be talking about it. Dr. Roy.
Okay, Wes. By the way, I'm looking at the poor guys on Echolink. They don't seem to have an audio feed right now, and some people are just checking out because they don't hear us there. So, if Lou is out there, if he could kick that Echolink machine back into life, I think there'd be some happy people on Echolink. But back to you, Wes.
Can I talk?
Yeah, the audio came back again. So if you're out there, Lou, doing things, thank you. I wasn't quite sure if you were done with your topic.
Okay. But we're going to the history of the radios. Sir Oliver Joseph Lodge was a British physicist and writer involved in development of and holder of patents for radio and radios. He identified electromagnetic radiation independent of Hertz proof, and this was in 1894. This was in Royal Institution lectures. So maybe it's not needed, but it's interesting to know it. He was trying with dry, sandy, rocky soil. The ground has high resistance, so a low-resistant ground connection can be made. In those cases, a counterpulse was used by him. On Wikipedia, there is an article also, and it shows the picture of an antenna of Lodge Mui Herd wireless system around 1900, the first counterpoise drone. So, yes, that was the beginning. And to Xian.
Okay.
And we're talking about low frequencies now. That's my favorite. I'm experimenting with low frequencies. I'm spending money with it. And I'm happy. The largest use of counterpoise in transmitters of low frequency, that was VLF bands. They were very sensitive to the ground resistance because of the large wavelength of the radio waves. Feasible antennas used at this frequency are electrically short. I was talking in the last segment about electrically short antennas. I didn't explain much about it, but we know that submarines use that system.
Well, I think they're kind of getting out of that business. I think they've one of the reasons why they've given amateur radio operators leeway of using the very, very low bands is because they're kind of shifting a lot of their data to local high-speed satellite transmissions via relays.
There is a problem with that because satellite transmission doesn't operate on 20 or 30 kilohertz or 18 kilohertz frequency. There are some known frequencies used by American submarines at 9 kilohertz, although 9.2 kilohertz frequency was used by ham radio amateurs to establish communication in Europe.
Wesley?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I realize that in the past, submarines utilized a lot of low-frequency transmissions, the problem being the terribly slow symbol rate, so they weren't able to really transfer that much data. It's my understanding that through the years, they've been moving to a completely different microwave-based transmission, utilizing, they kind of send up buoys to the surface of the ocean that contacts overhead satellites and beams high symbol rate, high frequency signals back and forth. So they're not quite using low frequencies as much as they once did, and that shift in their strategies was part of the reason why the FCC loosened the requirements on amateur radio operators. Up until previously, it was verboten because the Navy in the submarines had carte blanche over those low-end frequencies.
There's a number of techniques allowing submarines to communicate with satellites. One of there are some of them that are classified, but what can I say about that is that they use low frequency to communicate with the how do you call that? A bow? what is on the surface and has antenna orange.
Boys, B-O-Y-E, B-O-U-Y, or something like that. Boys. It's pronounced boys.